Welcome to 3DBPM's Pulse Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most advanced, fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing technologies with the people that make them happen. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of 3DBPM, the leading media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-changing world of AM.
We report to Dror.
Okay.
He is the CEO. He is in charge of all the marketing and sales. And
so you came into Extra as VP of this area, or where did you come from? Just out of curiosity.
Oh, my story.
A little bit.
Okay. First of all, I'm 32 years in this field.
Okay.
I was one of the two founders of Cubital.
Okay.
One of the, if not the first company worldwide, for sure in Israel, in 3D printing.
Okay.
And just to get the dates right, we started developing our machine in the beginning of 1986.
Okay.
So it's over 32 years.
Yes.
And we did develop a beautiful machine, bigger and more complex than X-Jet.
So it was a PolyJet type of machine, material jetting.
It was not either. It was something that today you can maybe compare it to DLP. But
okay.
we had a mask, and we had a UV light lamp, floodlight, in one flash through the mask onto the layer of polymers, solidifying all the areas where the light hits, because it was light sensitive, and solidifying, leaving the other areas liquid. Thank you, dear. Thank you.
We have coffee
so
over there.
This is the basic technology. It's it does not have a specific name today.
Okay.
We call it mask solidification.
Mask solidification. Okay.
So we had a lot of challenges those days, creating a new mask for every layer. New mask. How do you do that? It was
right.
500 millimeters by 500 millimeters by 400 millimeters.
Okay. Wow.
Huge. How do you make a mask? That was I can tell you a whole month of stories.
So when Cubital went into object or?
Not really. Cubital was a separate company, and we sold machines. I was the CBO of the company, and founder and CBO, and I sold the very first machines in 1988, 87, and we had a big patent fight with 3D Systems.
Okay, sure, of course.
Big,
huge.
Which we won. It was very nice. And story.
Yes.
When X-Jet was established in 1998 by Hanan, I already knew Hanan and from Idanit.
Idanit, okay.
Then I started to work for Objet. By that time, Cubital was kind of declining.
Okay.
Because the machine was too complex.
Right, I understand.
Too sophisticated, too advanced, and didn't really work. Bottom line.
Big challenge.
And I faced a lot of trouble with unhappy customers.
Okay.
So it was tough times. Then I started to consult to Objet. 1998. And so from Cubital to Objet, many years at Objet, all the way almost to 2014, so about 14, 15 years with
sure.
Objet. That time I was responsible for business and sales and marketing in West Europe. At that time, Dror was VP in marketing, and I reported to Dror. So we go together a long time. Then after that, I left Objet, and for a short time, once again with Dror, he asked me to join him to another 2D printing company, Skodix. Short story, maybe a year and a half, 2 years. All that time, I still was a consultant to 3D printing companies worldwide and
okay.
to market research companies like Research and Research,
of
Market
course.
And Markets, BCC, all these companies. I worked as a freelance. Behind the scenes, I never published much, but
sure.
I ran a lot of market research for them. Then we moved to X-Jet. Dror became the CBO and I became the VP. VP in right. industries, we hesitated whether to call it
manufacturing in defense.
Manufacturing or right. just industrial markets.
Okay, okay.
So this is my background, all the time in the industry, all the time 3D printing, all kind of technologies I moved and got to know during my experience.
So you've seen your company grow and finish, and you saw Objet grow and do what Objet did. So where do you see XJet going now, and why is it different than how is it different than both?
First of all, we are in the metal and ceramics world, which is completely different, in my own opinion, from the polymer world. And in this world that was started by EOS in 1991, I was there when they started. I was there wherever
every
happened.
Time.
I can tell you how Stratasys started.
Sure.
And of course, I know personally Chuck Hall,
Lange, and
Scott, and I know all the others from those days where
of
everybody
course.
Was very young,
very
and
small,
beginner,
yes.
very
yes.
small industries and everything. And stories from here to eternity.
I mean,
and I knew
can
Professor
imagine.
Emmanuel Zak, I know him personally, who started Z Corp and then he started now digital desktop metal.
Right, okay.
Going back to your question, I think that inkjet is excellent technology, both for 2D printing and 3D printing, because it allows you to have a full control on
yeah.
what you do, droplet by droplet, and this is the case.
Yes.
We really control every droplet, and this goes all the way back from the beginning of Objet, even before that, when we all worked at Cytex, the big 2D printing digital imaging company, world leader.
Familiar. I'm familiar with.
Yeah. And so you control every droplet, gives you the possibility to make real accurate parts and highly detailed. So basically this is what I believe in. I think that the inkjet printing is much more advanced than any other bonder jetting, binder jetting, or powder bed fusion. Whether it's lasers, whether it's like Arcam,
electron
beam, EBM, whatever it is. And I think that not only for that, but also for the basic fact that this is the only technology that sometime in the future
multi-material.
And we don't know what will come out. If you start with just a little bit of this and a little bit of that, stainless steel with bronze, with chrome cobalt, with whatever.
A little piece of metal, of one metal inside
yes,
another
this
one.
This is real digital metal.
Yeah.
Though Hagenas took the name digital metal
yes.
for their business, but this is really digital metal
right.
where every voxel, theoretically, can be made of different material. So this is the future, and I believe that Exit will be a leader. But I do not look down at other technology at all. I believe that powder bed fusion will have its place as kind of, you know, the base that maybe the really hard-working machines making big chunks. But
and maybe the binder jet in making the bigger
yeah.
the bigger batches below
batches,
that
yes,
so many levels many tiers of
they
levels
will find
of
their place, but for all advanced applications, and especially one day we will make ceramic and metal together, we shall not only have our market niche, it's more than a niche, it's market space, but also
sure.
new markets that do not exist today
do not exist, yes.
open up. This and this is the only technology that can do that. So I do believe in the future
so,
of Exit
so
strongly.
My question, obviously the question is, so what happens if and how do you plan to compete if, you know, who the only company that I know has a very advanced level of knowledge of the inkjet technology is HP. HP has been making announcements, and so what happens when they decide to invest heavily on nano jetting through their inkjet heads? And do you think they would be able to catch up? Like, how do you plan to compete with them?
First of all, personally, and I think that the whole company are welcoming warmly HP into the metal additive manufacturing. Never mind what they do, the mere fact that a company like HP took a strategic decision to go into metal additive manufacturing is so important. It will give the whole business the push it really needs.
And by the way, that's what happened with plastics. Everybody was afraid they were going to take everybody out, and they said they weren't going to, and they didn't.
They didn't.
You know, they really brought a lot.
Push.
All right.
Now, doing the same thing for the metal additive manufacturing is very important. They are most welcome. Together with what GE did,
right, with the Panda Bread,
with purchasing the other companies and going strongly into this field, not just as a user, but also as a player, gives a huge push to the whole industry. So this is the really propulsion we needed so much. So first of all, that's welcome and blessed. Yes, they are masters of inkjet. They decided to, they chose the binder jetting technology as the application of the know-how of inkjet, which is okay. Basically, their machine is much of the same binder jetting as we know. Maybe they changed the way, shortened a little bit the process,
sure,
did this or that, but this is it.
It's basically binder jetting.
Which is okay. So their real competition is binder jetting, other binder jetting. What if they go into nanoparticles? First of all, we may find patent issues here. Because one thing Xjet did right is creating a heavy belt of patents around the technology and the process. So this is the question mark, what will happen? And even if they do, they will give the same push and will open up the markets to demand the quality of direct material jetting that we do, and maybe one day they will do. So this is also okay on this side. We believe that the market, the future is huge, big enough.
Sure.
I mean, it will never happen that a company, huge monster like HP, will really wipe out all the others.
Of course.
Also, maybe, I don't know, it's up to Hanan and the team
might
to
buy
decide.
It, right?
Something may happen,
right,
maybe
right,
some corporations.
Like, sure.
Not necessarily buy, but corporations. This way or the other. Don't forget, it's not easy to do what we do.
I realize,
it's completely different from jetting polymers or binders. It's a real challenge to develop the suspension that we did, and it's a real challenge to get the nanoparticles floating there, and then to manage the flow of liquid throughout all the containers and pumps and pipes and printing heads down to the piezoelectric cells, and to control it not to solidify. So it's a big challenge.
Sure.
I'm not saying HP has the resources, know-how, and everybody can work there if they want to develop it, but it will take time. And I believe that they will, if they decide to have some kind of cooperation with those that already know how to do it.
Now, going back to ceramics.
Yes.
What are the challenge? Like, what are the challenges there? Is it, like, in my view, there may be, right now it's not the case, but not, you know, there's a lot of development on metal injection molding for materials for 3D printing. That may happen for ceramics. So low cost parts with acceptable resolutions. Do you see that as a competitor to your technology? As a challenge or not, it's the same issue that you can make, you know, much higher resolution or much better parts, much better materials.
Well, first of all,
and do you think that there would be a market for low cost but binder jetting level products in ceramics, like lower cost?
Lower cost. First of all, in the ceramics, the whole field of technical ceramics, as you know, is now rising.
It's rising, right.
And more industries are starting to learn this new opportunity of working with ceramics. And you know, ceramics can perform where even the best metal cannot anymore.
Right.
And today, with the huge demand for more power from the engines, being jet engines, internal combustion engines,
you need ceramics.
More power,
you need
more
advanced
power, higher temperature, higher conditions, higher temps. Everything is moving higher and wider and deeper. So metals, with all due respect, get to the point of performance. Then, where technical ceramic start to shine. So, first of all, the whole technical ceramics world is starting to grow, and you see it in the numbers. Additive manufacturing within ceramics is tiny.
Tiny.
Nothing.
So
do
tiny.
Not exist.
Right.
So the need is there for sure. For short runs, the same thing that happened in polymers, the same thing that happened with metals will happen with ceramics.
It will.
But here it will grow together with the industry, meaning that additive manufacturing has a fantastic chance today to grow
with the
together
ceramic
with the growth
industry.
Of the
yes,
ceramics.
So grow double, because the industry is growing and additive manufacturing is growing. Yeah.
It's double growth.
That's what I think too, yes.
So they do it parallel together, huge opportunity. To your question, there will be a need for lower, relatively lower quality and lower cost parts. For sure, in certain applications. But still, if you look at where technical ceramics are being used today, they are all of high quality. Well, not all, sorry. Most of them are of high quality. They are needed in jet engines, in automotive engines, in nuclear plants,
okay,
in heat exchangers, in the PCB industry.
Right, in the right.
You need top quality.
Top quality.
Very clean.
Precise.
So the major need will be for high quality parts. The good news for us is that from the very beginning, the nature of this industry is of smaller parts, higher complexity,
sure,
and excellent quality. So for us, it's excellent opportunity. It will take time.
We need to invest
in market education together with the technical ceramic companies. So we already are in touch with some leaders in this world. They are very interested in what we offer.
I'm sure, yes.
And maybe we shall have news in the near future. I'm not supposed to say that.
I was just contacted by the Ceramics AM Expo in the US to promote the conference. I saw you participating with
Yes, we are pushers.
Leaders, yes.
We are sponsoring the Ceramics, part of Ceramic Expo in the US.
Right, that one,
and,
yeah.
And the Ceramic Tech every 2 years in Munich.
Right.
We were there. Huge success, a lot of interest. We have a lot of leads and
sure,
a lot of interest coming. But this is initial interest.
Right.
Like people say, wow, you can do this, you can do that, what about this? So we can make both tools and all, like in metal, tools for direct production, and we can make directly the end product itself. Now,
right,
when we say short runs, looking back 32 years in my experience, when we started in 1987, 8, started to sell, we thought of short runs as being 10 to 15 units, good for, we didn't even call it rapid prototyping, we call it fast modeling, something
right,
like that.
Rapid manufacturing.
Rapid
yeah.
manufacturing was a little late.
Okay.
In the beginning it was models, just models, not
okay,
even prototypes, models. We moved from handmade models to machine that makes models. So 10 to 15 units, that's all,
short
that's
run.
Good.
Right.
Lower than this is good. Higher than this, you go manufacturing. Then it moved a few years later to 100, then 500, then 1,000. And the last thing I heard about a week and a half ago, I heard
50,000, yeah, 50,000, 40,000,
50,000.
100,000.
In their brochure,
yes,
clearly, he said up to 1,000. Are you serious?
That's a short run.
Are you serious? 100,000 units, maybe a very small one. I don't know. 100,000 units. I'm all with it.
Well, if you push the geometry enough, you know.
So the definition of short run is moving.
Yes.
One thing else that is changing is the in the past when we said prototype, we had one of, two of, ten of. This is a prototype today. A prototype could be 500 prototypes.
Okay, sure.
The whole batch
and
is
different
prototype.
Iterations and
exactly applications, iterations, the same model, the same prototype. So this is prototype 500 prototypes.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah. Now you could do it. It costs like one.
Yeah.
That's great. So, One question I had was back to XJet technology. It was on materials, but two questions. One is which materials? So, you know, you said correctly that, you know, powder bed fusion is going to represent a base, but they have their own evolution. They're moving, for example, there's a lot of talk about the refractory metal, so really tough, really complex metal. And so are you... Could your technology move into this, and the cost of the metal? Like, is your technology cost competitive with that? Does it want to be? Is it going to be, or does it want to be?
Materials is a huge issue, main issue, because our justification is by offering the right materials to the market, to their applications. The decision which material to choose is purely a business issue, not a technical issue.
Okay.
There are technological aspects as well. It's not immediate.
Of course, it's not like...
Yes. But first of all, we need to have the justification, the business justification. And that's what we do, first of all. And of course, there are metals that goes without saying. Titanium, we need it. Aluminum. We need it. Stainless steel, not just the 316L, maybe the 17-4 and the 15-5 and others.
Etc.
Tool steels, like raging steel for mold making. All these are in line. There are some other materials that may find their way into our list, like chrome cobalt, which is catching up, like the very popular nickel. Right. Star, you know,
yes.
Star in Inconel
the
here,
super
Inconel
alloy.
There, Inconel, do you do Inconel? We do Inconel. Inconel here, Inconel there. My head was last TCT, Inconel was the line, and then AMAG and the IMTS and all the places.
And there's
where
like
we meet.
Trends. Yeah.
Trend now, Inconel is the star.
Super
which is okay.
Trendy.
It's okay. Inconel, it can be. Definitely, we can do that. It's just a matter of a decision of investment. So, which metal will be next? We yet do not release it officially because we have several options and we work in parallel. You saw the machines downstairs. They are dedicated to materials.
Okay.
Checking and testing. the material and the printing system is a marriage. They need to adapt to each other. That's why we don't believe there will be a real competition on making secondary source materials.
Okay.
It's too expensive,
too much,
too tough.
Yes. Not for many years at least.
Look what happened with the object. So many years until the first imitation came up.
Sure.
And that's only polymers.
I didn't even know they had an
imitation.
Yeah,
the
I'm sure
company.
There is.
There
yeah,
is
of
a
course.
Chinese company.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the
I don't remember the name. But the results are accordingly.
Of course.
And yes. And that's polymers. When it comes to metals and nanoparticles and floating, this is a different story. Much more difficult, much more risky. So, the materials is a pure business decision. Metals will be coming definitely down the road. We need to be aware of the basic needs to get our first foot in the door with known materials where applications are known and the need for additive manufacturing is clear there. This is one thing. Another thing is opening up new materials, exotic materials, combination of materials. This is the future. So we are open to both directions. In ceramics, it's the same story. We started with zirconia, and next will be alumina.
Alumina, of course.
Which is almost there. And then we have others. Will it be silicon carbide?
I was about to say yes.
Huge applications in the sensing industry, all the sensors, because you know silicon carbide has excellent capability of sensing oxygen ions. And this is excellent for sensors in engine of all kinds. And any kind of combustion to monitor.
Amazing.
This is one thing. What about the silicon industry?
Right.
Semiconductors, ceramics are amazing.
Yes, they are.
You have full conductors, you have semiconductors, you have
heat, which is incredible, heat resistance, toughness,
yes.
Chemical resistance.
Amazing. And they can be one type of ceramic, completely different performance than the other. The opposite.
So what about...
In temperature-wise, they can stand up to amazing.
What about glass? That makes little sense? Or advanced glasses?
Personal comment. There is an Israeli company that is...
I know them, yes. I talked to them. Micron 3D, yes.
So for a certain time, I was a consultant for them, working with them. Then I started to work with the Exit. And when they started to ask me about, what about using metal? They can use it, and they already did this.
This is
the limit I work for Exit. Then we had to separate. So they work with the glass, and with glass, it's not easy to find the right application for us.
That's right. It's impossible. It's funny.
It's not easy. We tried, and I tried, and I talked to companies, and I have good contacts until now with the glass manufacturers worldwide because of them, and not only. And we couldn't find really something strong that we say, wow, like in ceramics and metals,
right?
It's difficult, but there will be some applications.
Eventually.
There are some nano engines and nano controllers, hydraulic controllers made of glass, where you do need very accurate internal geometry of channels and valves and passes.
Sure.
and containers, very tiny, and everyone is separate design. That's where
that could be the application,
but I don't think that we as a company will find glass.
No, it's unlikely.
I don't, it's my personal view.
It's funny because it's such a huge material, but not for added.
They are so well already used today.
Right.
For such wide range of applications, glass is fantastic material.
Right.
All type of glasses.
Right.
And there is another issue with. I'm not talking about the MIT glass project. I'm talking about.
Right. Glass. I remember that.
Yeah. Being transparent is a basic need.
Right.
And they're not that transparent.
Not if you make layers or a powder or...
That's
kind of a paradox, but yeah, because you would think that it's because it's so used, because it's so simple to make, it makes no sense to do printing.
That's right.
But we could talk a lot about materials, but let's. I have one last question on another issue, which is, obviously you have a lot of advantages in post processing. We saw that how easy it is to remove supports, and so do you think? But another trend in additive manufacturing is the factory of the future. You know, everybody makes automating the entire process line from end to end. No lights out, no humans.
Yes.
Do you want to do that, or is there no? It's probably less expensive to have a human put the put the material into the then to have a robot do it. But is this something that there would be a justification to work on towards a fully automated process line for XJet type technology?
I don't see why not. On the contrary, I think that our technology allows for easier automation.
Easier, yes.
And the fact that maybe in China it's less expensive to
right.
have
a robot.
But why not? Actually, a robot could take the tray out of the machine. A robot could put it in a vat. Everything will look different.
Right.
Nothing like what you see today. And then from the vat after a short time into the sintering oven, etc., etc. It lends itself to automation. We are not there yet. It will take time. I don't think that others are there yet as well. I saw all the beautiful VRs and everything for those companies, without mentioning names, offering a full factory. Even our own friends at Stratasys are now into automation, which is fine. We don't think we need to give a solution for that need right away, but we lend ourselves. It's easy to do. The machine itself is simple. By the mere fact that you don't need nothing, almost nothing next to the machine, no sieving stations and no filtering and no ventilations, etc., etc., and the operator, and we're not working with powders, means that we are much more mature for automation. We are like a CNC machine. We're like a drilling machine. We're something easy. So full automation from our machine onwards, I don't see any technical hurdle here.
Sure.
Just a matter of developing the process, developing and using the right automate. Justification, a big question. It first of all depends on how deep additive manufacturing will proliferate into the industry. And it's kind of, we call it the hen and the egg. Who came first?
Sure, sure.
So
the more you automate, the more they
the
adopt
more they
it.
Like.
The more they adopt it, the more you automate.
But it develops in this way. I see it as a trend. And this is part of adapting additive manufacturing anywhere, in metal, maybe in the ceramics in the future, in the polymers. So yes, we are easy. We can go for that. I don't see any problem there using automation with our machines. And combining our machine, we have an open operating system, easy to connect to, easy to talk to communicate even with your
handy iPhone,
you can communicate with the machine today, and you have the screen that you see on the machine, you have it on your iPhone, and you get information ongoing. So why not?
Why not?
Yes.
And business-wise, which are the most interesting regions for XJet right now? As far as geographical regions, where do you see the most growth? What are you most interested in? And
mostly, of course, in the United States or America, including Canada, North America, and Europe. But we are very open to the Far East. We have good contacts there. We know there are huge markets. We need to get business-wise well prepared. You need a local presence, you need local channels. And yes, the North America and West Europe, let's say Europe, not just West, all Europe, are our target market today. And we are now in the beginning of laying down our channels, the network. We started with Carfulan, the guys from the UK.
Yes.
They are our first distributors. And we will proceed with others.
How long did it take to get the machine after you order it now?
We look at something between 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
It may be a little bit. You see, everything is fluid.
Of course.
We are in the very beginning.
Yes.
A year from now, maybe a year and a half, we'd say 90 days. That's our time. Normally.
You say you're in the beginning, but obviously, and it is a startup, even as much as big as it is. But is it in line with everything that they planned 10 years ago? Is this where you expected, where they expected to be when they started? Now?
Well, 10 years ago, they started XJet in a different market, in different
countries. Right.
So
no,
let's talk about
when they started. When they started getting into that.
When we moved from the solar energy into 3D
printing. And this is something that happens a lot in additive, that companies start with one business and end up with another. It happens a lot.
There could be a huge success in the solar energy, but because.
Oh yes, sorry. Yes,
we can talk about it. This is a story we can talk about. You're joining our tour.
Yes.
So we can